Sudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 1, Text 25. Yanni bado bimano yam tadvadat paninam vada tatanayasya kaivalyad abhimano kilatmana parashya dhammakarturhi himsa kenasya kalpyate Yanni bado bimano yam tadvadat pratinam vada tatanayasya kaivalyad abhimano kilatmana parashya dhamma kartorhi himsa kenasya kalpyate Matajis, ladies, Vaishnavis. Yat, in which, nibada, bound, abhimana, false conception, ayam, this, tat, of that, in parentheses, body, vadat, from the annihilation, praninam, of the living beings, vada, annihilation. Tata, similarly. Na, not. Yasya, of whom? Kaivalyat, because of being absolute. One without a second. Abhimana, false conception. Akila Atmanaha, the supersoul of all living entities. Oh, right, sorry. Parasha, the supreme personality of Godhead. Dharmakartu, the supreme controller. He, certainly. Himsa, harm. Kena, how. Asya, his. Kalpyate, is performed. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the supreme controller, the supersoul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. Because of being covered by the material bodies, the conditioned souls, including even greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayers and accusations? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, non-different from himself. Since everyone has a material bodily conception of life, if Krishna has such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies. But since Krishna does not possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually conscious and blissful. Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchitananda Vigraha. His form is eternal. Blissful knowledge. Satchitananda Vigraha. And Ananda Chinmaya Rasa and Kaivalya are the same. Krishna can expand himself as Paramatma in the core of everyone's heart. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text 3, this is confirmed. Chetragyam Chapimam Viti Sarvake Cheshu Bharata. The Lord is Paramatma, the Atma or Super-Self of all individual souls. Therefore, it must naturally be concluded that he has no defective bodily conceptions. Although situated in everyone's body, he has no bodily conception of life. He is always free from such conceptions and thus cannot be affected by anything in relation to the material body of the jiva. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16, text 19, Tamaham dvishita krudan samsareshu naradamam shipami ajasram asubam asureshveva yoneshu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence in various demoniac species of life. Whenever the Lord punishes persons like demons, however, such punishment is meant for the good of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may accuse him, saying, Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, and so on. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Instead, he takes into account the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna, so many times. He sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species. But then, when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Blaspheming the Supreme Lord or his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul, but Krishna, being very kind, punishes the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities and then takes him back home, back to Godhead. The vivid example for this is Vritrasura. who was formerly Chitraketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Vritra. But then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops the soul's habit of blaspheming him, and when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminitha Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nivashesha Sunyavadi Pastachade Shatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhuna Chananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasati Gaura Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I think Dravida Prabhu in his class yesterday gave one analogy very briefly, and he didn't really elaborate upon it that much, which really kind of like hits the nail on the head as far as this whole, you know, way of understanding, you know, Krishna's partiality, impartiality, the way he's, you know, treating the demons and the way he's, you know, relating to blasphemers and like that. Also, you know, the way he's partial to devotees. He gave the example of like a loving father. So a loving father, his... how would you say it? His duty is to make sure that his children grow up properly. You know, they get the proper training, they get the proper education, that they grow up to be, you know, mature, responsible people like that. Okay? So, you know, he's not so much affected, and he does what he has to do. You know, if his children are misbehaving, then he punishes them. And if his children are behaving properly, then he rewards them to encourage that behavior. And he's, you know, he's not like so much of, he's not deeply affected by the, you know, the things that they may say or may not say. You know, two or three-year-old child says, "Dad, you're a creep." You know, he doesn't get all bent out of shape by that. He just knows, oh, this is a 2 or 3-year-old child speaking out of frustration, out of, you know, because I just have to chastise him or correct him. And he just, you know, it's just like, he just takes it in stride. And he goes ahead and does his what he has to do, which is proceed to educate them and train them up, you know, so that they grow up properly. So that's like Krishna. You know, Krishna is so above. You know, sometimes I'm amazed when I read these, you know, purports, and Prabhupada goes to such lengths to try to, you know, make the distinction between the difference between ordinary, like, you know, conditioned souls and Krishna's position. Krishna's in a position so much like, you know, infinitely superior to like the ordinary living beings that are being described here, conditioned living souls. I mean, it's like, you know, so it's just that. It's just that Krishna's the loving father, and he's just doing what he needs to do to help the conditioned souls in the material world progress towards, you know, a stage of spiritual awareness where they can once again understand what the reality is, what the real situation is. You see? So everything that's happening to us in this material world is to that end. You know, it's all engineered by Krishna for that purpose, just to help us advance spiritually. And sometimes it's difficult for us to appreciate that. Sometimes it's difficult for us to see that, what to speak of appreciate it, but that's what's going on. Okay? So now on some of these other points Prabhupada makes in the purport. I guess here in the beginning of the purport, he talks about how the living beings are covered by material bodies. The conditioned souls, including greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, they all think that when the body is finished, everything is finished. So when I read that, I couldn't help but think of Professor Katovsky. Prabhupada he referred to that quite a few times. Professor Katovsky was a professor in a university in Moscow. I believe he was either a linguist or he was actually an Indologist. Okay, so he was an expert on, history of India, basically, right? And he knew something about Sanskrit, and he knew quite a bit of stuff. But so Prabhupada was pleased to meet him, and he had, you know, a lengthy conversation with him. But at one point in the conversation, Professor Katovsky, revealed to Prabhupada that, his attitude, his idea was that, he said, "Swamiji, when the material body is finished, that's it. There's nothing after that." And Prabhupada mentioned that. I looked it up on the Veda base last night. Prabhupada actually mentioned that about, you know, 20 different lectures. He was so, you know, he was amazed, actually. You know, Prabhupada was amazed that, wow, he is this learned, educated person, supposedly, so-called. He's an Indologist. And this is what, you know, he was really thinking. He was just thinking. He was, you know, that was his, level of spiritual understanding. In other words, no spiritual understanding. You know, what was the ABC of the Bhagavad Gita? This man was totally, you know, oblivious to. So Prabhupada was kind of like shocked by that, you know. And so I guess that's, you know, I, as soon as I read falsely educated professors, I couldn't help but think of him in particular. And goes on to say, this is due to their bodily conception of life. And Prabhupada would always, actually one of the most quoted, I think it's the most quoted, or if it's not the most quoted, it's certainly up there in the top three or four quoted shlokas from the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that verse. It's actually a verse spoken by Krishna, I believe, to the gopis. Yasyat mabude chunape sudatuke swadi kalatradishu bhoma ijadi yatirta buddhi salule nakarichit janeshu abhigeshu saeva gokara. That a person who is, you know, has no spiritual understanding, or is just taking the material body as the all in all, as the place of birth is worshipable, etc., who goes to a holy place just to take a bath and not associate with, you know, personalities, spiritually elevated personalities, is no better than an ass or a cow. So, you know, that's there. So that's these people are actually in that category. They might appear to be greatly learned or educated, but they're not. They're actually just on the level of an animal, you know. And then here later in the purport, Prabhupada mentions something about here. He gives the example of, I thought this was kind of interesting here. It's talking about how he punishes the conditioned soul in one life for their sinful activities and then takes them back home to back to Godhead in the next. And Prabhupada gives us the example, Vritrasura, who didn't actually, he didn't blaspheme Lord Vishnu or Krishna. He blasphemed Lord Shiva as Chitraketu. And for that he was punished. His mother Parvati cursed him to become a demon. And then after that life, he went back home, back to Godhead. We just recently, you know, did that part of the Bhagavatam, sixth canto. And I thought that was interesting that Prabhupada gave that as an example, because, you know, it seemed like when we were reading it in several different purports, Prabhupada emphasized that it was really a very minor offense. You know, that he wasn't saying it in a sort of like a malicious kind of way. You know, he didn't really have an envious attitude towards Lord Shiva. He was just kind of, it was jokingly, right? It was kind of, you know, just, ah, look at Lord Shiva, wow, check this out, this is incredible, you know. So he wasn't really, but Mother Parvati got very, you know, offended by that, and she cursed him. So, but Prabhupada gives that as an example here. So, I don't know, I was thinking about it, and the only way I was able to understand it is that, you know, why this was given as an example is that we have to be that careful. we have to be that careful, that blaspheming a devotee is such a serious thing that even you shouldn't even kind of like mess around with joking, even jokingly blaspheme devotees or tease devotees or make jokes at another, at a devotee's expense, because it's not appreciated. You know, and I guess this is the example here. That's the only way I was able to, you know, kind of understand why this was given as the example, to emphasize that point. Chitraketu, he really didn't, as I said, he was just joking. But that's, you don't do that. You know, it's not a good, it's not worth the risk. and look what happened to him. So we have to be very careful about that. Actually, to be honest with you, I had kind of experienced that like myself, even in my own Krishna devotional service or attempt at it. That, because on Sankirtan all day long, I'm always joking around with people. Pretty much that's, Sankirtan is really, book distribution for me is just like joking. I'm just joking with the people all day long, just joking and compliments, and I just ask them for a donation. I mean, there's practically no philosophy. If I say some philosophy, it's not because I think they can understand it. It's simply because just to remind myself that what I'm doing out there. But mostly just joking around. And, you know, I got in that habit, and I started doing that with devotees. And I started, like, you know, found out I was joking around with devotees, teasing devotees and making jokes at the devotees' expense. And I just, over a period of time, I just experienced my Krishna consciousness going, meow. I could feel it. I could feel the difference. I could just feel how, like, you know, I was losing it. So just at one point, Krishna was kind enough to, you know, help me understand what was going on. I just decided, okay, I got to cut this. I got to just, you know, I really made a big effort to just, okay, I got to just stop that altogether. You know, because it's, I could feel like, don't do it. Don't take my word for it. Don't try it yourself. But that's what happens. You know, it's very, very serious thing. So anyway, that's there. And another point here, Prabhupada makes in this purport towards the end here, is how Krishna, he punishes, talks about here, he punishes the demons or the conditioned soul, you know, who are blasphemous, by having them experience one lifetime in a lower species. And then in the next lifetime, he has to accept the body of a demon and then taken back to Godhead. So there's one lifetime punishment and then back to Godhead. And I was just thinking, when I read that, I was thinking, well, it's not just, Krishna doesn't just do that with the demons or the conditioned souls. He also does that with devotees. And I remember hearing, I think it was a lecture Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan, where he's making the point that devotees who go to Vrindavan and they engage in sinful activities in Vrindavan, you know, thinking that, oh, you know, I will be saved by Vrindavan Raj, you know, Krishna. And nobody says, no, what happens is if devotees deliberately perform sinful activities while living in the holy dham, then the result of that is they take the next birth, as Prabhupada said, as a dog, hog, monkey, or tree. And they have to, you know, this is even like people engaging fully in devotional service, but at the same time they're not being as strict as they should be. So as punishment for that, they take a birth as a dog, hog, monkey, or tree. And then the next lifetime they're liberated and they, you know, the devotional service continues. But, wow, you know, serious stuff. You got to be careful. We're playing for high stakes here. You can't mess around with, you know, Krishna and devotional service. And, of course, I mean, you could say, oh, well, that's sure glad I'm not in Vrindavan. But, you know, I don't know. We're living in the holy dham right here. This is a holy dham. You can't, same thing. I mean, maybe there is some difference, but this is also like a, you know, totally spiritual situation. You have to be very careful. Especially, you know, once you take initiation and you make those vows, you got to be very careful about how, you know, doing everything properly. And so, you know, it's like a life of great responsibility. Being a human being is a life of great responsibility. And when you get to the stage of being a devotee, it's even more responsibility. And we have to be, we have to understand that it's on us. You know, we have to do it. And it was like Dravida yesterday was emphasizing the importance of association. And yeah, association is important, and I'm going to say something more about that as we go on. But, you know, ultimately it's up to each individual to see that you are becoming, we are he or she, or we are becoming Krishna conscious. And there's things that can help. There's things that, you know, are conducive to us becoming Krishna conscious, and they're the things that are will harm us, you know, detrimental, and we want to avoid the things that are detrimental, and we want to, you know, seek out the things that are helpful. But ultimately, it is up to us. It rests on our shoulders, you know, whether we're going to become Krishna conscious or not. And I found this very nice. I found something Prabhupada said in a lecture, which kind of, this is a classic example Prabhupada gave, which supports this point. Prabhupada said, I didn't bother to note when and where. So he says, you are under the clutches of Maya. You have no independence. Neither anyone has got any independence to save you. That is not possible. The same example as I gave sometimes. So Prabhupada gave this example more than once. He said that you learn how to drive airplane. So you go high in the sky. But if you are in danger, no other airplane can help you. You are finished. Therefore, you must be very careful pilot to take care of yourself. Similarly, in this material world, everyone individually has to take care of himself. How he can be saved from the clutches of Maya? That is Krishna consciousness movement. And he goes on, a teacher can give you hints. The acharya can give you hints that you can be saved in this way. But the execution of the duties, that is in your hand. And sometimes we think, oh, by the mercy of this, by the mercy of the... Yeah, that's there. But, you know, this, the way you get the mercy is by execution of the duties, to, you know, nicely, properly. That's, you know, that's the general process, because there's always that thing, Kripa City, and that's there. But, you know, like so many devotees have pointed out, when they've given class, you can't count on getting an honorary degree. You know, you gotta, you know, do the work and everything. And that happens wonderful, you know, but for the most part, you gotta, you know, do all the things you gotta do. Anyway, Prabhupada goes on, he says, if you perform the spiritual duties rightly, then you are saved. Otherwise, even acharya gives you instruction. If you do not follow, so how can he save you? Prabhupada goes, he concludes it. He says, you have to take it in your own hands, seriously. So that's important instruction. And this is something from, once again, I don't know where it's from, but it was sent out to all the devotees in an email to inspire everybody to participate in that monthly Sankirtan festival. So Prabhupada here again, here's something that gives us further insight into the way in which, the attitude which we have to try to execute that instruction. Prabhupada goes, you must voluntarily agree, not mechanical. Spiritual master says, all right, let me do it. No. You have to understand very nicely, with love. When you work for Krishna with love and enthusiasm, that is your Krishna conscious life. If you think that it is troublesome, but what can I do? These people have asked me to do it, I have to do it. Prabhupada says, that is not Krishna consciousness. You have to do it voluntarily and with great pleasure. Always you should be enthusiastic. When I am engaged in Krishna's service, the person should be thinking like this, Prabhupada saying, when I am engaged in Krishna's business, Krishna's activities, Krishna will surely take me back to home, back to Godhead. And he says, and Krishna says, Manmano Bhava Mad Bhakta Majaji Manmanosko, I will take you back. So Prabhupada goes, Krishna is not a liar, so we have to work with enthusiasm. So that should be our attitude, in engaging in devotional service. And that's somebody, upon hearing that, you might think, well, that's a lot. That's not easy. It's a lot to do. It's a tall order. Well, yeah, it is. But, there's that expression, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. It's not something necessarily you can do overnight. Maybe some fortunate souls can, but with practice, you could do a lot of things. Prabhupada, I remember this. I have one god. Well, many of us have a god, but his name is Bhagavat Ashraya, and he was in. Went to see Prabhupada in Mayapur once. He was having some difficulties, whatever. So he related that to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was in the Lotus Building. He was sitting behind him in that little room, sitting behind him. And Prabhupada went like this. He went to him. He said he told him. And they said no. First he went. After listening to me, he said, so, chant your 16 rounds, 4 regulative principles, 3 Gayatris, and then Prabhupada went like that, indicating, and he said, drops of water wear away stone. Probably some people have seen that. So that was Prabhupada. So with practice, things are achieved. And Prabhupada goes, that's sadhana bhakti. This is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave in Vrindavan, 1972. It says, sadhana bhakti means to practice it. It does not require much education. It does not depend on your riches. You just follow the regulative principles, to rise early in the morning. Anyone can rise early in the morning. He says, it is simply practice. To visit the temple early in the morning, it is simply practice. So this is sadhana bhakti. So it's practice. We have to practice. And, and if we do practice, there's that example of, there's always that, we should always, well, we can remind ourselves that of the benefits of practicing and, the consequences of not practicing. Like, for instance, with Mangalarti, it's imperative. You got to come to Mangalarti. It's a very important part of sadhana bhakti, coming to Mangalarti. So we should remind ourselves that, hey, there's a lot of benefit into coming to Mangalarti. I mean, I was trying to print out something else other than this on my computer, but for some reason I didn't do it correctly, and I printed out the computer. The printer just printed out the whole Guru Vastika, 8 prayers to the Guru by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Just printed it out. I was trying to print out something different, but the whole thing just printed out. So, this is Krishna's arrangement. So I looked. I said, "Well, wonder why I got this," And then I read the introduction here, the paragraph before the actual prayers, and it says here, "This is so that these prayers we sing every morning were written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur." So there's a quote here from him. It says, he says, one who with great care and attention loudly recites this beautiful prayer to the spiritual master during the Brahma Muhurta obtains direct service to Krishna, the Lord of Vrindavan, at the time of his death. So that's something we can remember. Just remind yourself of that. Like, whoa, there's a lot of benefit to be received or, you know, experienced just by coming to Mangalarti and being here and every morning chanting these, as he refers to it, beautiful prayers. You know, the result will be that one will obtain direct service to Krishna, the Lord of Vrindavan, at the time of his death. So, you know, that's nice to know. And that's like, you know, like, this is an example of the donkey, where a donkey is motivated by a carrot and a stick. You know, so the carrot kind of is what keeps him, you know, oh, yeah, I'll get the carrot. But when the person who's, you know, there with the donkey, when he can see that he's getting a little distracted, then he's got the stick to, you know. So that's the carrot, you know, reminding ourselves of the benefits, you know, what we have to look forward to if we do this. And then the stick can be to remind yourself something like this. Here's this is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave here in Los Angeles, actually, back in 1974. This is like, you know, reminding yourself of the consequences of not following properly. Prabhupada says, on that occasion, he said, if you stick to Krishna, if you catch Krishna's lotus feet very tightly, then you will not fall down. But if you make a show of so-called brahmachari, so-called grihastha, so-called sannyasi, then you will fall down. Prabhupada goes, we are experiencing that. He says, then you must fall down. Krishna will not tolerate a defaulter, a pseudo-devotee. Maya is very strong. Immediately capture him. Come on, why are you here? Why are you in this society? Get out. So, in other words, if, you know, that's, we should remember that too, that if we're not following properly, you know, it's not like, you know, that very moment, you know, like, oh, I missed some Mangalarti, and then, you know, the temple president comes and says, you know, no. You know, Krishna gives you, Krishna gives you time, you know, but if over time we're not following properly, then, you know, at some point that's what's going to happen. That's what Prabhupada says. You must fall down. If we don't follow the, you know, the rules and regulations properly, it's just a matter of time. You see, and we will lose the desire. We'll lose the desire ourselves to, you know, live in the association of the devotees and be, you know, be part of this movement. So that's there. And so it is a struggle, you know, it's a struggle, and Prabhupada acknowledged that. This is one really nice excerpt. Vishnujan, Maharaj or Prabhu, he was with Prabhupada here in Los Angeles, I think it was way back in 1969, and he was asking Prabhupada, you know, he's addressing this point of how it's not easy, it's a bit of a struggle, you know, trying to always be engaged nicely in devotional service. And he actually said to Prabhupada, how is it possible for a man whose mind is constantly clouded to chant Hare Krishna? You know, he's always, somebody who's always thinking about family, friends, country, nation. And Prabhupada said, this is Prabhupada's response, a very interesting response. Prabhupada acknowledges, you know, the whole situation. He says, yes, think of. He says, go ahead, think of that. That's okay. But he says, at the same time, chant. Two things will go on. Two things will go on. And this will conquer. And then Prabhupada laughs. As Maya is forcing you to drag you from this Krishna consciousness, you also force Maya by chanting Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says, there is fight. And Maya will go away. And then he quotes that famous verse, Daiviyeshu gunamayi mama maya dracheyam mamevi epipajate mami tamtirantite. Prabhupada says, this Maya is very strong. She'll force you to entice you to the other path. But if you do not stop, if you chant loudly, and then it goes dot, dot, dot. I don't know if Prabhupada, if it just, anyway, if you chant loudly, then Prabhupada, oh yeah, Prabhupada just went on to another thought. He said, just like Haridas Thakur was chanting, Maya could not victimize him. You know that. What was his stand? Simply chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Maya could not entice. Maya failed. Maya became his disciple. He did not become Maya's disciple. So Prabhupada goes on and says, this is tug of war, so don't be afraid of Maya. Simply enhance chanting, and you will be conqueror. That's all. Narayana parasarve, nat kutaschana bijati. We are not afraid of Maya because Krishna is there. Yes, Krishna says, Kunteya pratijanahi nami bhakti pranashati. You just declare, my devotee will never be vanquished by Maya. Maya cannot do anything. Simply, you have to become strong. And what is that strength? Chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Prabhupada says, then he goes, concludes by saying, loudly, yes. So, yeah, so the struggle is there, but if we, as Prabhupada just so nicely, just nicely heard from Prabhupada, if we just kind of, you know, stick to the program, chanting Hare Krishna, and then we will come out victorious. And I found something, I actually heard this, I thought it was pretty far out, in a lecture by Radhanath Maharaj. This idea of the struggle, you know, between the lower self and the higher self, it's there. And, you know, it's not something that just we're aware of. It's something that, you know, people from all different cultures and all different, you know, ways of life are aware of this and having to deal with it, you know, on some level or another. Of course, unfortunately, they're not as able to effectively deal with it as devotees of Krishna, but they, you know, they're aware of it, they're dealing with it. So Radhanath Maharaj, in one lecture he gave this example of a Native American elder. This is a Native American elder once described his own inner struggles in this manner. And it says, so this is a Native American elder speaking. He says, "Inside of me, there are two dogs. He says, one of the dogs is mean and evil. The other dog is good. He says, the mean dog fights the good dog all the time." So that was how he described his, you know, his inner struggle. And then it was actually Ernest Hemingway who was talking about this. And then he asked him, he says, so which dog wins? And when he asked him which dog wins, he said, this man, he reflected for a moment and replied, "The one I feed the most. The one I feed the most, that's the dog that wins." So I was thinking, well, how do I understand that? Remembering this verse in the Bhagavad Gita, actually Dravida quoted this verse yesterday. He was talking about association when he quoted this verse. But, you know, actually there's something that comes before that, sangha. And it goes, jayato vishayan pum sam, sangat te shupajayate, sangat sanjayate kama, kama krota bajayate. So it actually starts off by contemplating the objects of the senses. One develops attachment. From such attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger arises, like that. You see? So it starts off with contemplation, thinking, what you think about. That's feeding the dog. You see? If you're thinking about sense gratification, you're feeding the bad dog. You see? And that dog's going to get more powerful. But if you're thinking about Krishna and Krishna's, you know, philosophy, Krishna's service, Krishna's pastimes, if you're that fortunate, you know, then that's feeding the good dog, and that dog's going to get stronger. You see? So that's how it works. So, you know, thinking is a really important thing. Thinking, feeling, willing, Prabhupada used to say. So much so that in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know, that Prabhupada quoted this verse, man mana bhavamadvitkam, one of the things I read. But in the verse before that, in the purport, Prabhupada said, you know, in reference to always think of me, become my devotee, Prabhupada said, this is the most important instruction in all the Vedic literatures, man mana. Most important instruction in all the Vedic literatures. And I think it's in the Padma Purana, it says that, you know, there's that verse, smartavyam satatam vishnur na smartavya na jatusit, sarva vidin sedasur asur etayur kimkada. Always remember Krishna, never forget him. And it says that that's the essence of all the regulative principles. All the other rules and regulations are meant to be servants and assistants to that. So, you know, very important. Feed the good dog. Think of Krishna, think of his service, think of his philosophy, et cetera, et cetera. That's like that. And what else we got here? Oh, yeah, and a very important, another thing to think about is, you know, in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about austerities of the mind, you see, since we're on the subject of thinking, you know. And Prabhupada in the purport says the austerity of the mind is to always be thinking about the welfare of others. You know, to withdraw the mind from sense gratification, always be thinking about how to do good for others. So that's a really, you know, important thing too, to be thinking about how to share Krishna consciousness with other people. And actually, this is the point I wanted to make was, in a class I gave, maybe it was 6 months ago, Giriraj Maharaj, he was, you know, when he was here speaking, he was referring to that. But I think he was just impressed by one thing I said, you know, so I'll say it again. I was making the point in that class, I was saying how compassion is a decision. You know, it's not for a neophyte devotee, it's there is an emotion. You know, generally people, when you hear the word compassion, you think, oh, it's a feeling, you know, you feel. Yeah, it is. But for a neophyte devotee, it's a decision. See, it's a decision. It's not like you might not feel compassionate. Be honest with you, I don't feel compassionate. It's a decision. I know it's the right thing to do. You know, to go out and try to share Krishna consciousness with other people. There's a lot of benefit in it for me. You know, because I know Prabhupada said to be quick, very quickly recognized by Krishna. Preaching is the shortcut process. So I'm doing it. You know, it's a decision. And in hopes that as time goes on, as I get purified, you know, as I become more advanced, then I'll actually genuinely feel compassion. But initially it's that. Just like sense control. Is that a feeling? No. It's, you know, feel, you know, but you do it. But why? It's a determination. You know, it's the right thing to do and you do it. So that's an important point. that, you know, we have to, initially, you know, you might feel like, oh, I don't feel any compassion. How can I preach? I don't feel any compassion. Well, my response to that would be, think of it as like a form of sadhana. Think of it as sadhana. It's something you got to do to just, for your own purification. And then think of it, at least initially, think like that. And then as we become purified, then we will actually, like Srila Prabhupada did, feel genuine compassion. And so just think of it as like a sadhana, a high form of sadhana. And just on this point of how high a form of sadhana it is, I'll read an excerpt from a very interesting morning walk conversation that took place in Chicago in 1975. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he was trying to get something, he was trying to get Prabhupada to sort of say something he wanted him to say about a codicil. You know, sometimes devotee would do that. Devotees would question Prabhupada in such a way as to, you know, to get him to give the response that they wanted to hear. But Prabhupada somehow, they couldn't do it. You know, Prabhupada always kind of was one step ahead, and he was more clever. Anyway, so on this particular occasion, Tomal Krishnamurti was asking something about a codicil. He goes to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, sometimes we've heard that a codicil is inauspicious alignment of the planets, and therefore one has to counteract this inauspiciousness by more chanting. So Prabhupada goes, he laughs actually, and Prabhupada says, no, it is the most auspicious, and chanting is more effective. Then Tamal Krishna goes, I remember you were instructing once that all of your initiated disciples should chant 25 rounds. Prabhupada says, minimum. Tamal Krishna goes, minimum on this day. Is that a rule? Is that we should all follow in all our temples? Prabhupada said, we are 16 rounds. And he goes, Tamal Krishna goes, no, I mean on a codicil. And Prabhupada goes, oh yes, a codicil, simple, you should chant. No other business. Nirjal. And then Tamal Krishna, he's going like, you know, he thinks, okay, now I'm getting what I want here. But then, so then he goes, so no preaching work? Should they go out for preaching? And Prabhupada says, no. Those who are preaching, not for them. I'm reading this just to get an idea of the exalted level of, you know, this preaching activity. Those who are preaching, not for them. Those who are sitting idle, and then he laughs, has, you know, he goes, preacher has no other regulation, simply preaching. A preacher is so exalted, he hasn't got to follow any regulation. But Prabhupada goes, but don't take advantage. And he laughs. Is actually, if one is busy in preaching work, that is first class. And he says, not my manufactured word, my Guru Maharaj. He goes, that Madhav Maharaj, when he was a brahmachari, his name was Hayagriva. So he was to go somewhere, but he was sick. So, and then, you know, news got back to the Guru Maharaj. And Guru Maharaj was informed that he was sick, and today is Ekadasi. He cannot take his regular meals. That was the message that got back to Bhakti Sanatana. So Guru Maharaj said, no. Let him take immediately meals and go. So, you know, Tamal Krishna goes, Maharaj was referring to Bhakti Sanatana Maharaj. Maharaj would sacrifice everything for preaching. And Prabhupada said, oh yes, he was not pleased with Ban Maharaj. He could not do anything. He was somebody who was sent to England and he wasn't, you know, they weren't able to be very successful. But anyway, you get the idea from that. You know, it's a very high form of sadhana. And this is something I found in the BBT office here. Getting running out of time here. Okay, this is actually written by Dravida, and I was just, you know, thinking yesterday, and this is going to tie in with a couple of last points I'm really going to try to whip through here, is that this is Dravida. He's always writing these nice poems and everything, you know. I was just thinking, wow, what an amazing individual, you know. He knows the scriptures so well, and he's just so absorbed in the philosophy, and, you know, even, you know, he's writing poems about Krishna, and they're good, you know. So I just remembered this one I found in the BBT office back a few years ago. It's actually the BBT mission statement. And he goes, as years go by and books go out, we see what life is all about. To serve the mission of our lords by spreading wide their sacred words. As well, they want us all to strive to let those words direct our lives. The safest path will lead us home, no more in Maya's realm to roam. I thought that was pretty good. So that was by Dravida Prabhu. So I think I've run out of time. Yeah. So thank you very much. Granto Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.